welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, your place for free, expert tennis instruction that can truly help you improve your game. Today's episode of the Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by SomersetSportsPerformance.com. Go to SomersetSportsPerformance.com to get a personalized workout and also nutrition and eating guide for under $10 a month. Essential Tennis Podcast is also brought to you by TennisTours.com, where you can go to plan and get tickets for your next trip to a professional tournament. Use the promotional code ESSENTIAL to receive a discount off your next trip. All right, well, today on the podcast, I have my good friend David Grumping back, who is a mental coach, and we're going to be answering a couple listener questions having to do with mental tennis, which is always a popular topic. So sit back, relax, and get ready for some great tennis instruction. My guest today on the podcast is mental expert and coach David Grumping, who works for Gemini Executive Coaching. David, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Ian. It's good to be back.
Yeah. Well, David has been on the podcast. This is his fourth time now. And you guys are going to definitely want to check out the other podcasts where David was a guest, because they're definitely some of the most popular shows that I've done here on the podcast. This is going to be our 68th podcast, and David has been featured in number 44, number 57, number 63, and now this one. And mental toughness and mental conditioning and mental issues on the tennis court just seem to come up all the time on the forums and in questions I get through emails. I mean, as definitely a very serious competitor in my own tennis game, I know that I could have used a lot of help myself, and did search out help in the form of books and other coaches and that sort of thing. David, I know that you competed as a tennis player as well.
Yep.
Why do you think that mental tennis or mental toughness issues become so prevalent for tennis players? Do you think that tennis is more of a mental game than some other sports, or are we kind of do we get exposed to more mental issues than most other sports? What do you think?
I think tennis and golf are probably the most mental sports that I can think of, that you need a lot of mental skill as well as physical skill and physical conditioning, all of that. And I think one of the reasons a lot of people post so much about it and talk about it so much is it's not something that is readily available to train easily and to get really good information and access to practicing and improving this area.
Sure.
You know, if you want to get a better forehand, it's really easy. You go get some lessons. It's not that easy to find a good mental toughness coach. They're not around that much. It's hard to just go to the local club and pick one up.
That's true. I'm going to take a guess. Do you think that tennis and golf are probably more mental than other sports because you're kind of all alone out there? You're kind of by yourself and nobody else to really lean on for support?
Yes. Yeah. I was actually going to say that. Yeah. I think that's completely the case.
Okay.
Totally individual with you, and you have the opportunity to beat yourself and you have the opportunity to beat the other person. You just have to choose which one you're going to do.
Yeah, I agree. And I think this is probably why I've talked with several people before, students, about how tennis players a lot of times will talk to themselves on the court.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of players just have running dialogues with themselves during matches.
Yeah.
Which may or may not be a sign of mental weakness. But I think to kind of feel sane out there, sometimes you need to feel like you have somebody to talk to.
Right.
When you're in the middle of a important match and kind of start getting nervous a little bit. And
right.
I don't know. Well, we've got a couple of questions here from our listeners, and I'm looking forward to your answers. One has to do with a specific stroke and choking or having issues performing well during competition with a certain stroke. And we're going to talk about, in general, how to build. David likes to use the phrase mental muscle. having, you know, kind of your mental game be thinking about it more like an actual kind of part of your body, and having to be something that you can condition and something that you can build up. So we're going to talk about that as well. I'm looking forward to both questions. Let's start off with a question from Mitchell, and Mitchell is in Australia. And I'll read through his question here. He outlines what his issue is, and then David and I will discuss. We'll see what David thinks. Mitchell wrote to me, and he said, "When I'm with my coach, I serve perfectly. I have a very flat and quite powerful first serve that I have about 75% hit rates. I'm madly working on a topspin second serve, which is not going, which is not overly strong yet. But when I'm with my coach, it's very consistent. I play with a group of guys that are around a 4 to 5 level NTRP. When I am playing matches against them, I totally lose it. I sometimes double fault through entire games. To be more specific, I toss the ball well, but I hesitate on my swing, often mid-motion, and most fly into the net. The flip side of this is when my serves are landing in, I tend to do very well and score a lot of aces. In recent weeks, this has been even starting to happen when I am drilling my serve on my own, something I spend at least 3 hours a week doing lately. Obviously, I know how to serve. How can I give myself some confidence to not become nervous when I am not in coaching?" So, David, what do you think?
Yeah, this is it's a good question. It's actually something that's very, very common with players is if you're doing something well in practice and then it's not showing up in competition, chances are that it's going to be somewhere in the mental part of your game to work on.
Yeah.
And sizzling competition is rough. It's really disappointing. And so there are kind of two things that we could look at to make a difference with this. The first, the simpler solution is that, you know, oftentimes with our serve, we think that, especially against better players or players we think are better, we have to do too much. And, you know, this notion, you know, you see even pro players when they're getting their second serve picked apart, they start to double fault more because they think they have to do a lot or do too much. And they end up psyching themselves out. You end up putting a lot of pressure on yourself.
Sure.
You end up trying too hard. You think about it too much. You really psych yourself out. So it's really what gets in the way specifically is the thought that I have to do a lot here. I have to make this really great opposed to just hitting your serve. So that's the first thing to look at. But I think that's not going to be as common, especially for most players, and probably isn't what's going on with Mitchell.
Okay.
But I mean, you can relate to that, thinking you have to do too much or you have to hit it too hard or something like that to make up for that they're a better player, something like that, right?
All right, so that could be possible issue number one is putting too much pressure on himself to perform at a higher level than is actually necessary.
Right, yeah.
If that would be his issue, what would you recommend? I mean, is that just a matter of recognizing that and then playing within yourself, or is there something else that you would specifically have anybody listening do if they're having that issue?
Yeah, it's actually pretty simple. It really is recognize kind of what it is that you're saying to yourself exactly. So these people are better, so I have to hit harder.
Okay.
Or it really just recognizing that you think you have to do too much. It's trying to do too much. And it's really recognizing that notion and giving it up when it comes. Just like we talked about probably in other podcasts. And also what you mentioned a little earlier, we have an internal dialogue.
Yeah. Right? Or and maybe sometimes external as well.
Yeah, right. Yeah, sometimes we put it on loud, right? And it's always going to be doing stuff and saying stuff. And what it's, you know, the thoughts and notions you have come and go. And some of them are, the thoughts and notions that you have aren't really worth keeping in mind. So you want to recognize them and let them go.
Yeah.
And once you do recognize them, they're pretty easy to not pay attention to.
Yeah, and let me just say, for any of you who feel like you might fall into that trap sometimes, it is very important to recognize when that's happening. And that's something that I personally can relate to a great deal, is feeling like I've got to go for the perfect shot on every swing. In college, I barely made my college team. I was the bottom of the lineup, and I often found myself playing a style of tennis that was way too aggressive for realistically what my skills were. And guys, everybody listening, tennis is a game of managing mistakes. You're going to make errors, but typically the person who wins is the most consistent. They're able to manage their style of play in such a way that they hit more good shots than they give up free points. And so if you go out trying to hit big shots over and over and over, big being a relative statement to your skill level, chances are you're going to make more mistakes than you do hit incredible shots. So definitely be careful of that, guys. Be aware of what you're playing like.
Absolutely.
So what about, so that's option number one. Maybe he's playing outside his skill level. What do you think the second possibility could be?
I think the second one's probably more likely. And this is, I'll say what it is and then I'll explain it.
Okay.
It's what I call being attached to an outcome. And we've, you know, some people out there have heard this before. But what I mean by this is that your focus is completely on some result or outcome instead of what it takes to achieve that outcome.
Okay.
So having the serve go in would be an outcome. And thinking about that and being heck-bent on that would have you tank serves a lot. I'll give a couple analogies. That it's like being at bat in baseball while hitting, looking at the scoreboard instead of actually the pitch to hit it out of the park.
Okay.
Or, you know, simpler, I know not everybody plays baseball, we're tennis players here, but you know, with driving, if you're driving to go play tennis, it's like looking at the court or in the direction of the courts while on your way to the court instead of actually looking at the road. So if you did this, you'd be pretty likely to crash. But we do this with our serves too, where our focus is not on what it's going to take to get the serve in, but it's, the focus is having the serve be in.
Sure.
The result or outcome.
Sure.
And so, you know, that's part of it. And the way to deal with that is, first, what it takes, you know, going another level deeper, right? Because, you know, we get attached to an outcome because we think that if we miss or if we lose, then people will think that we suck, or we'll look bad to other, we'll look bad to others, or people won't want to play with us or something, you know?
Yeah, we don't want to let down ourselves and the people around us. Typically.
Right. We don't want to let our coach down. We don't want to let the people on the other side of the net down if they're our friends or hitting partners. This part is, you know, what you think would happen or what it means if you miss a serve or lose a match or whatever.
So it's kind of undue pressure. It's kind of unrealistic anxiety. At least it's unrealistic to have to worry about those things, because reality is you'll still be okay if you miss the serve, right?
Yeah, and we have in the back of our minds, if I miss this, then people will think I'm bad at tennis. Or if I miss this, then all the practice I did was for nothing.
It was a waste of time, yeah.
Yeah, or if I did this, then it means I'm getting worse. So then we get kind of messed up about the actual serve, and then it won't go in. It's like, it's a vicious circle. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure.
I can give an example for myself. This was recently, and I showed up just to watch a tournament, and it turns out it was a team tennis tournament. I showed up just to watch, and I got there, and they're like, "We need you to play." Somebody dropped out.
Oh, crap.
And there were good players there. You know, I was going, it was my friend's tournament, and I get on the court, and I was all bent out of shape. I couldn't hit right. And the whole time, like, I'm a mental toughness coach. What's going on?
And
I was really worried that, if I was attached to having the ball go in, I was attached to playing well and that was my focus, instead of my focus being on master your shots or moving my feet well or something like that, which would create the result of having the ball go in, right?
So focus more on the process
rather
than what bad things could happen if the results don't go your way.
Yeah, exactly. And it takes uncovering, which is hidden to you, to be able to do that. It takes uncovering what you think would actually happen to you or what you're afraid of happening if your serve went out.
Sure. So let's give Mitchell a plan of attack here. What would be some good, wholesome, whole grain things to think about during his service?
The first thing is figure out what it is that has you be attached to the outcome.
Sure. Yeah.
What it means that if you lose, or what it means if you make the serve or hit a great serve. You know, what are people going to think of you? What's going to happen to you? You got to figure that out first before you can even figure out what to do instead, right?
Yeah, we've talked about this before. I get the feeling that some people listening might think that could be a pretty tricky thing to do, to actually identify a specific thought or maybe phrase or I don't. What do you think? Do you think for the average level player, there's like a light switch where you know, everything's going fine, and then there's a really specific thought or thought process that goes on, and then all of a sudden everything crashes down? Or what do you think?
It would be a particular notion that is reoccurring for you.
Okay.
And it would be in the back of your mind, so it would take some thinking and what I call intellectual effort.
Okay.
To figure it out, but everybody listening is certainly capable of figuring it out on their own just based on listening to this and then going and getting a piece of paper and writing some stuff down.
Sure.
So I highly recommend if you haven't, and even listening to what we're saying right now, I'm sure people can be out there thinking of, oh, well, I see how I get tight because I'm afraid that my coach will be disappointed if I don't play well.
Sure. Yeah.
And if it's really not coming to you, or you want to take it as deep as possible, get a piece of paper. And in the area that you're struggling in, say your serve or say in finishing a match, what would be the worst that would happen? What would it mean about you, or what would happen to you if you did lose or if you did play really well in whichever area that you happen to be struggling with? And it takes some intellectual effort writing some things down, and you'll eventually get it. It is a little like a light bulb.
Sure.
When something goes from kind of in your blind spot to in your view.
All right. So step number one, identify a specific thought or a phrase, or I like how you said notion, a specific notion.
Yeah. I think notion is the best word.
Yeah. That's good. All right. So what's step two?
Let me say one more thing to help them kind of figure out the notion. Just in terms from an example for me, for when I had to jump in that tournament, I was tight. I was playing terrible. Was it
doubles or singles that you had to play?
It was doubles.
Okay.
So really, what I figured out is, I was totally attached to playing well and an outcome here. And what I figured out was that in the back of my mind, if I didn't play well, then my friend hosting the tournament would be disappointed in me.
Right. Yeah, you're playing for your buddy, right? You don't want to.
He's like telling everybody I'm a good player and like I can fit in with these guys.
Right.
And so I'm like, well, I better measure up. So I was kind of freaked out. It didn't turn out well. Just my mental game wasn't on so much.
Sure.
I mean, I realized I didn't have anything to lose in the end. So it turned up, but I'm sharing this because it'll give people a little bit of help figuring out where they get stuck in terms of this.
So were you able to put that aside and play relaxed?
The second set was much better than the first set, yeah.
Okay, good.
I figured it out.
Good man.
I was proud of myself.
Otherwise, you'd have to go and rethink your career, right?
Right, exactly.
No pressure.
All right, so that's the first step.
Okay.
The second step is, once you've gotten that out of the way, because that's been your focus before, you just didn't know it, or you weren't aware of it. But once you see that, I mean, there really is an opportunity to come up with something else to focus on. And it's very simple. It may not be easy, but it's very simple. It's certainly doable, though. One thing I focus on is, I focus on what part of the box I want to hit it in.
Mm-hmm.
I focus on having my elbow come through first on my serve. Just a small technical thing that you think of. I focus on what kind of spin I want to put on the ball. I focus on turning my shoulder. Any one of these things. Just as long as it's not, I hope I don't miss or I hope I make it in.
Would you say that in general, the more specific we can be, the better when it comes to these triggers?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I mean, it would seem to me, and sometimes I use the phrase, a lot of times I'll teach or I'll be working with a lower level player on their serve, let's say a 3.0 level player, maybe 2.5, mm-hmm. somebody who's kind of just learning how to serve well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll put a target out there for them to aim for.
Yeah.
And almost always with this level player, that they'll tell me, oh no, this is a waste of time. Why are you putting? I'll put like a cone out there and be like, okay, or even split the box in half and say, all right, we need to hit that side of the box 10 times, and they'll immediately say, I'm not good enough to aim.
Right. Yeah.
And then as soon as they start focusing on whatever specific physical target I've given them, they almost always surprise themselves, and they'll start hitting 3, 4, or 5 serves in a row accurately. And I find that the smaller the target, typically, they might not hit the target, but they're going to be, in general, much more accurate than if it's just aiming for the box.
Right.
A very general target.
Yeah, absolutely. It's because their focus is on aiming the ball. If you're focused on aiming the ball, then you can't be focused on, I hope I, the outcome of, oh, I hope it goes in.
I hope my friends don't dislike me.
Yeah, exactly. Or I don't want to let Ian down.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
So it's one or the other. Choose, you know? First, you have to figure out what the choices are.
What's interesting about Mitchell, I think, is that he typically serves the best, he said, during practice when his coach is there.
Right.
So it seems like maybe his coach helps him focus. So maybe it's his friends or, you know.
Yeah, he probably, you know, it could be something. It probably isn't a fear of disappointing his coach in this situation. For some people, that gets them.
Sure.
But for him, it may be something along the lines of, you know, having to show the people you're playing with that you're good enough or, you know, measuring up to them so that they'll keep playing with you or they'll respect or admire you or your tennis.
Right.
Because if you play bad, then they won't. And then something along those lines is probably what I would guess.
Okay, so identify the phrase that's holding you back or the notion that's holding you back.
Right.
Replace it with something good and specific
yeah.
to kind of divert your focus to something that's going to be worthwhile.
Right, because you're always going to be focused on something. And a lot of times we're focused on something ineffective, like
good
being
point.
Outcome attached.
Sure.
But, you know, focus on how hard you can hit or how much spin you can put on it or focus on aiming it or just focus on something, not right. the result. And it'll be a lot more effective.
Sounds good. Anything else? Any other steps to this process?
Let's see. I don't think so.
Well, Mitchell and everybody else listening, I like that David suggested to actually take a piece of paper and pencil with you. I very, very often recommend to my students that they keep a physical notebook with them in their tennis bag to take notes after lessons because inevitably, you know, you're going. If you do a 1 hour lesson or clinic, you're going to forget some things by the next day. It's a great tool to be able to write down things that you've learned that you can go back and practice later. And things like this are going to be invaluable later on when you figure out some kind of pattern that's occurring in your play and something that's holding you back. To be able to make a physical note of that. To be able to work on it later or come back to EssentialTennis.com and ask about it and get some advice about it's going to serve you guys very well.
I completely agree. Actually, I thought of something that would be useful to add for
everybody sure.
listening. You know, a good indicator before you serve that you are attached or focused on the result is that you're worried or nervous or tight before the serve. If you're concerned about if the serve is going to go in, I would recommend stop and sort yourself out a little bit before you serve, you know, and
sure.
using kind of what we talked about so far. And, you know, with this, it takes, you know, I say this all the time, it takes practice. And it may take a few matches before you fine tune what the notion is that is holding you back or having you get attached here.
Right. Yeah, I think that's important.
There could be a couple of them too.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it takes a couple matches maybe before you kind of get through them and kind of figure them all out and get yourself sorted out with this area. You could be good for a while and come back too. So, you know, mental toughness is something that, just like your stroke, if you stop hitting forehands for a while, your forehands can get worse.
Right.
So it's all about what your focus is on, and it will take a few, you know, it takes a few tennis lessons to get a good forehand, it takes a few matches or something to kind of flush out what is having you be attached in your serve or wherever you're stuck in your game with getting tight or something like that.
Right. So, Mitchell, be patient. If you don't figure it out right away, don't let it bother you. Keep on being focused on what's going on and do your best to identify exactly what the issue is, and let's replace it with something good to keep your mind distracted from all the
clutter.
Potential bad things, yeah, definitely.
Right.
All right, well, David, ready to move on to our second question?
Yes, let's do it.
All right, let's do it. This question is from Brian Mark, who posts on the forums, and Mitchell does too, by the way. He joined the forums about a week and a half ago or maybe 2 weeks ago. He's our second Aussie on the forums, and it's great to have him there. Brian Mark posted about building that mental muscle. He has a couple of quick sentences here. I'll read them. Is there any sort of drill I can do for mental conditioning? Only having 3 points of concentration won't cut it. What can I do to start getting that to a 5 or 6 points and then recover quickly? I know this won't be a quick process, but surely there's something I can do to start increasing my mental strength and recovery time is just like any other muscle, right?
Right.
Right. So, David, what do you think? Can we give Brian some specific things to do to build up that mental muscle and make him a tougher competitor?
More fit mental player?
Yeah.
The best thing I would say is to visualize running. No, I'm kidding. Pictures of running
say,
really
that's
far.
That's good.
You know, we kind of got to answering this on the forums, and there's really, you know, to get better at tennis, you get on the court and you hit balls. You know, and to get stronger legs, you go to the gym and, you know, you run and do squats and things.
Right.
And see, that's going to the gym for your muscles or going to the gym for your tennis strokes. But going to the gym for mental toughness is getting yourself in competitive situations.
Okay.
And, you know, that's your workout arena for mental toughness. You know, so if some examples are, I mean, the best is to play a tournament. That's the thing that would probably be the best gym for your mental toughness.
Yeah, that's like...
pressure is on.
Yeah, that's like the real deal then.
Yeah.
As soon as you walk in, the first time you guys go and play a USTA tournament and you walk in that door, I mean, everybody's got their game face on, you know, all the match sheets are all up, and it's go time.
Yep.
There's no screwing around.
Yeah, that's the gym for sure. Or, you know... there are other things you can do, like you can play for money, or you can play. Some people find it pretty challenging for themselves to just play sets with people.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, just find a situation that actually makes you kind of uncomfortable, because you know, running sprints to get fitness makes you uncomfortable. Hurts.
Yeah.
Mental toughness requires being uncomfortable, also.
Yeah.
It's still climbing a mountain. It's because we, you know, a lot of times I mentioned this before, but a lot of times we expect mental toughness to be quick and easy because it's, we can't see it or something. It's not. It's just like any other type of fitness.
I think a lot of what that is the concepts, like in and of themselves, seem simple.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, sure, figure out what's wrong and think about something else.
Right.
Yeah, no problem. but it's a lot more complicated than that. And you're right. I think the average player runs away from situations that do make them uncomfortable. Kind of like how, you know, people who are out of shape, they run away from the gym.
Right. Yeah.
You know, there's no getting away from it. If you want to be mentally tough, you have to put yourself in situations that you don't perform well in and do it over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, playing for a dollar or something, or playing for, you know, maybe buying Gatorades after your practice session, do it for pushups
or
something.
That matters.
You know what? That's a good point. If you've got $1 billion, I guess putting a dollar down is not going to make you nervous,
right?
Is it?
It has to be something that matters. I wouldn't say, you know, put your kids in the line, but it's something that's important.
That would do it, though.
Yeah,
but no,
that would do it.
Don't bet your children. Don't do that.
No, don't do it. We don't condone that.
But yeah, I give my coach a lot of props when I was growing up and I was taking private lessons. At least once per hour lesson, private lesson, we would play for something, and it would be, you know, he would buy me a soda afterwards, or we would play for push-ups very often. You know, if I got 3 points before he got 10, then he would have to do push-ups, and that would fire me up. You know, I'd be all over that, mm-hmm. Wanting to, you know, beat my coach. Any other ideas to put something on the line?
Yeah. Well, that's the first half of it. The other is, you know, you can play all the tournaments you want and never think about your mental toughness, and you'll make some progress, but not a whole lot. It's like going to the valleys and standing around and looking at the machines.
Yes. Good point.
But what there is to do is actually think about, you know, read the forums, the things that people post, or listen to these podcasts, and really, I don't know, take it to heart is the right word, but keep it on your mind when you're playing and do
sure.
the work.
I mean, yeah, just listening is not good enough, guys.
Right. You actually have to get in situations and practice it and keep it in mind and have it be your focus.
Sure.
To really get the results. I mean, like I said, you know, the way to strengthen your mental toughness, you know, say for Mitchell, what we were addressing about serving earlier is to get the piece of paper and do the work and then get out on the court and see if that works. And then it doesn't, go back.
Sure.
Go back to the drawing board until it does.
Yeah, and, guys, you know, be purposeful, I think is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. You have to be intentional about
yes
using this in order to expand your mental toughness by paying attention to it when you're on the court and doing the work, too. mean, we all, you know, a lot of us go to the gym and we take tennis lessons for our fitness or for our stroke production. And, you know, this is what we're describing now as the gym for the mental toughness part of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's great stuff. Anything else to add to that before we wrap up?
Oh, that's all I got, I think.
Okay. Well, it's been great having you here again, David, and good show. Thank you for answering the questions from our listeners. And tell us about your blog. You talked about it the last time you were here. Go ahead and tell everybody where to go to get more articles and information from you.
Yes, I am starting a project where I'm going to be writing articles on different mental toughness topics. And, you know, I posted a thread asking kind of where people are challenged. So to kind of give me an idea what would be kind of the best thing for people that would make the most difference.
Sure.
And so I'm going to be posting that probably on my blog and, you know, just checking out my website, there are things to train there too. I forgot the question.
Oh, no. Well, where should we go? What's your website?
It's GeminiExecutiveCoaching.com /sports.
Okay. GeminiExecutiveCoaching.com/sports.
And there's a blog you can check out. I write about a whole bunch of things. And I highly encourage everybody to use it as a resource, just like Essential Tennis.
Awesome. All right. Well, David, thanks again. And I look forward to having you back on the show again when we get some more good mental toughness questions. Thanks very much.
Great. Thank you.
All right. That brings the Essential Tennis Podcast, episode number 68, to a close. Thank you very much for joining me today and for listening to the show. I hope that it was helpful to you and informative. Before I wrap up for today's show, I just want to remind you guys about Essential Tennis Live, which is a live call-in show from Essential Tennis. To find out all about it, all you have to do is go to essentialtennis.com/live, or from any page on the website, you can click on ET Live in the menu on the top part of each page. But basically, myself and other pros discuss tennis topics each week, and we take callers and answer questions live from people listening to the show. If you guys missed the show, it's no problem. You can download each episode at EssentialTennis.com, or you can find it now on iTunes, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, just like you guys do to the podcast. So go check it out. All right, that does it for this week. Thank you again to everybody for joining me. Take care, and good luck with your tennis.